Chapter 13, Jailer Vadvaram's Autocracies. These happy days of undisturbed prayer and meditation lasted only for about 2 months. The wheel of karma now began to move in an unhappy direction. We were enjoying all this liberty because of a Bengali jailer who was very kind and considerate. The superintendent of the jail was a short-tempered, peevish Englishman named Mr. Husband. He did not dare to interfere in the arrangement and supervision of the jailer, because Baba Jeevan Singh, Inspector General, had great faith in him. Both Baba Jeevan Singh and this angelic Bengali jailer kept the prisoners very happy and yet showed tremendous lot of savings to the government. The Bihar government had great faith in their integrity and nobility. The jailer received the title of Rai Bahadur as a reward for excellent services. He treated the prisoners with great compassion. We also had great respect for him. Whenever he came, we stood up out of respect for him, except at times when we were sitting in prayers. But whenever Mr. Husband came, he compelled us to stand even when we were sitting in prayer. But we never obeyed his orders and never cared for his threats. At first we showed him some respect by standing up whenever he came, but this attitude became threatening and overbearing. We stopped standing up even when we were not praying. It happened many times that when the angelic Bengali jailer came, we stood up as a mark of respect for him. But when immediately after that, Mr. Husband came, there we sat down, to show that we did not care a fig for him. This annoyed Mr. Husband very much, but he was helpless. He reported the matter to IG Prisons. When he refused to take up notice of it, he sent the report to the governor through the DC. The angelic jailer came to know about these mischievous reports of the superintendent against him. He at once requested the IG Prisons to transfer him to some other place. At first, IG Prisons did not agree, but when he insisted, he was transferred to some other place. Here ended our happy days in this prison, and fate brought us face to face with another Punjabi jailer who exercised authority with a vengeance. He was a Brahmin, and his name was Vadvaram. The IG Prisons considered him his own man, and he sent a Punjabi jailer in the hope that he would be kind and considerate to the Punjabi prisoners. For this very purpose, he had just been promoted and made senior jailer. He joined hands with Mr. Husband, and both started treating us with the utmost brutality. They thus created a lot of trouble for Baba Jeevan Singh, IG Prisons. Contrary to the specific instruction of the IG, he started treating us in a very cruel manner. He was revengeful under one misapprehension. In 1915, some political revolutionaries had looted the village Chabachak and killed one of his relatives named Baili Ram. A Canadian revolutionary named Sajjan Singh of Kakrano, Firozpur, was arrested and tried to the Lahore conspiracy case and sentenced to death. This jailer took one of our companions named Sajjan Singh to be the murderer of his relation Baili Ram. Although we explained to him that Sajjan Singh of Lahore conspiracy case had been sentenced to death and was not alive, he still believed that our companion Sajjan Singh Narangwal, District Ludhiana, of supplementary Lahore conspiracy case, was a murderer of Baili Ram. Thus he let loose atrocities on us with a vengeance, and he made up his mind to inflict as much punishment on the whole of our group as his authority permitted. Mr. Husband was already annoyed with us, so as soon as Vadvaram took charge as jailer, he fixed up grinding wheels in every cell, and after getting us medically examined, he secured the superintendent's order for hard labor for every one of us. He examined our history tickets and enforced us all the old brutal methods of exacting hard labor. The superintendent and the jailer would come with the whole staff and compel us to stand up and salute them. They did so particularly when we sat for prayers early in the morning, but we ignored their orders and presence and did not move. We neither stood up nor responded to their orders. After making some futile attempts to make us stand with the help of the staff, they went away. Then Vadvaram took a mischievous step. He took away the force of our prayer books, our gurkhas, and increased our hard labor duties. Wrath was aroused when the arrow struck. They did not know that most of the prisoners had memorized the major prayers. We recited the prayers and sacred hymns all the more loudly. We completely ignored the orders for hard labor and loudly recited Gurbani all day. We might have agreed to a reasonable amount of labor if it had been enforced in a normal way, but refused to submit to these atrocities inflicted in the spirit of vengeance. I was getting from some fruits which he stopped providing after putting some derogatory remarks on my history sheet as his plea. His main charge against me was that all the prisoners were reciting prayers under my orders and they had struck work because I asked them to do so. So I was to be taken to task first. The medical officer was sent to examine and certify that I was fit enough to do hard labor. The medical officer was a Bengali gentleman. He was annoyed to see on my history ticket that the jailer had stopped giving me fruits without referring the matter to him. He then examined all the notings of the medical officer of previous prisons. He then examined my body thoroughly and wrote on my history ticket, only to be given light work if necessary. I told him that I could do even this amount of work only if I was given proper food. Otherwise, I would not do any work. The medical officer considered this objection legitimate. He told me that there was no reason why I should not get my necessary diet, but no one paid any attention to the orders of the medical officer. The result was that I was compelled to go on hunger strike and work strike. All other prisoners, except perhaps one or two, struck work. Had I been given my normal diet, I would not have gone on hunger strike. For about 4 or 5 days, I was kept in solitary confinement, during which period my very existence was ignored. After 5 days, they asked the medical officer to put me on penal diet. The medical officer was standing nearby. He burst into laughter and told the jailer ironically, "He's already undergoing penal diet." This did not put them to shame, but impudently wrote on my history ticket, "Solitary punishment for a week." A heap of pulses and grains was kept in the room to be cleaned. The week passed without a morsel of food. I was then given the punishment of keeping standing in fetters. On hearing this, the prisoners who were doing light work also struck work. With the sole exception of one man, everyone struck work. All the prisoners were tied with chains to pillars and kept standing. Even in this condition, everyone recited Gurbani. For us, this moment of trial and sufferings became a moment of prayer and penance. The superintendent and jailer tried to stop us from reciting Gurbani, but we recited it all the more loudly, the sweet poems of Sukhmani. They shouted at us, but we cared not a bit for them. They got exasperated and gave orders that we should be made to stand in the sun, but the heat of the sun did not silence us. To torture us still more, they ordered that straight jackets made of canvas be put on our bodies, and we should be made to stand in the hot sun. I was ordered to be taken to a place far off where I could not hear the recitation of Gurbani by my companions. They thought that if I was completely isolated from them, they might stop reciting Gurbani. The sick prisoners then started shouting the victory cries of Sat Sri Akal. All the prisoners stood in revolt. The situation was almost out of control. The superintendent and the jailer were unnerved. They came to me. unchained me and offered to relent. They immediately agreed that no one would be given hard labor. No one would be compelled to do any work. I was asked to give up the hunger strike. They promised to give us back our gurkhas, and we could recite Gurbani as long as we liked. I told them that they should first show in practice decent behavior and good treatment, and then only could we agree to reasonable terms. Everyone was unchained. The prayer books, our gurkhas, were returned. All the orders of hard labor were withdrawn, but my companions would not agree to any condition until I was taken near them. They insisted that I should be kept in the same block with them, and they would do as I bid them to do. Otherwise, they refused to obey any order. The jail authorities had agreed even to this. I was taken close to them. I requested everyone to give up resistance. Everyone was quiet. The superintendent and jailer, however, were stung by this humiliation. They felt degraded to find that the prisoners turned down their request, but at once accepted my suggestion to give up resistance. They immediately reported to IG Prisons that Ranthir Singh was a ringleader and was causing a good deal of trouble. After sending this report, they started the same old brutal way of treating me. No food was given to me to enable me to break my fast. I was compelled to continue fasting for many more days. My companions asked me every day whether I had broken the fast. I avoided giving the answer in the hope that the jail authorities might fulfill their promise. Early one morning, the superintendent brought the whole gang for force feeding. At once he threatened me, but finding me unshaken in my determination to resist, he ordered that I should be immediately taken to the hospital. The medical officer was given stern orders to carry out force feeding immediately. While I was being taken to the wards, I told my companions everything. As I fasted for many days, I was very weak and did not hope to survive any physical tortures of force feeding. I told my friends as I was moving on that it may be the last meeting with them, and had as separated streams never met, we may never meet again. All the prisoners burst into tears and cried helplessly. Within a matter of minutes, I was taken to a secluded room attached to the hospital where no one could see what was happening. The room, however, was very clean, airy, with large windows and excellent ventilation. Through the iron bars of the windows, I could see the whole sky, the cemented floor and the lovely walls, and the sweet-scented surroundings made me feel that I was for a moment lodged in a palace hall. Brooding over the thoughts of beloved God, I sat down on the floor in silent meditation. Opposite the window, lovely rose flowers could be seen in flower pots, fragrant and in full bloom. Light showers of rain bathed the whole atmosphere in pristine glory. My brooding spirit soared through the six chakras of consciousness in the spinal cord to the highest seat of consciousness, and was poised in the melody of inner celestial music and contemplation of His presence. Deep and poignant love tilted my soul, and my mind was absorbed in the spontaneous utterance of the following hymn. Charna Kamal Sang Lagi Dori Sukh Sagar Kar Param Gat Mori Rahao Anchala Gahayo Jan Apne Ko Man Vido Prem Ki Khori Jas Gavat Bhagdras Upjyo Maya Ki Jali Tori Puran Pur Rahe Kirpanid Anana Pekhyo Hori Nanak Me Liyo Da Sapna Preet Na Kabhun Tori. With thy lotus feet is my mind attached. Ocean of peace, liberate me. Let me hold the hem of thy garment. My mind is intoxicated with love. By singing thy glory, thy love is awakened. The snare of Maya is destroyed. Everywhere I see the perfect Lord. I care not to see anything else. Saith Nanak, He has united with his servant. He has united his servant with him. My love for him will never decline, says Guru Arjan. The members of the hospital staff crowded around the room. The office staff of the prison, though far away, heard the song and rushed to the room. Mr. Husband stood there seriously disturbed. By the time he had come, I was deeply absorbed in Gurbani, and as I sat in Samadhi, I was not quite conscious of my surroundings. A whole crowd stood listening in dumb astonishment. No one dared to touch me or disturb me. After about 45 minutes, the chief head warder, who was a Sikh, was ordered to open the door and make me talk. Bound by the orders of the superiors, he came near me, and placing one hand on my shoulders, another on my feet, said, "The superintendent is standing outside the room and wishes to talk to you." "I'm not in a mood to talk to him," said I. At this moment, Mr. Husband came in and shouted, "Why did you not stand up when I came in?" "Such was the will of my husband," I said. "Which husband?" he asked. "The true husband," I told him. "Your name is a misnomer, and you do not deserve this name. My true husband is ever with me. Who cares for the false husband? You said you were busy and not in a mood to talk to me. Tell me, what keeps you busy?" he asked. "You cannot understand it," I said. "Why did you sing so loudly?" he asked me. "I could not help it," I said. "It was not pre-planned." To this, Mr. Husband asked, "Now what do you want? What type of treatment do you expect from us?" I told him, "You can accord me to any type of treatment you like, but at this moment, please do not disturb my peace." Mr. Husband, in addressing the chief head warder, forced him to stand up. To that, the chief head warder says, "Sir, I cannot do so. Please do not compel me to use force on him. When I touched his body a little while ago, my arm became numb. I feel helpless." Mr. Husband says, "Will you not obey my orders?" The chief head warder says, "I would rather resign." "I will suspend you," says Mr. Husband. The chief head warder replies, "Why don't you yourself try to move men, or ask some other officer to do so?" Mr. Husband moved towards me and then stopped short. Then he turned back and ordered the door of my room to be locked from outside and kept well guarded. I thought he may now give orders for whipping, but something strange happened. He did not punish the chief head warder for disobeying him. He did not issue any new order, but kept the order for force feeding still in force. The Bengali medical officer and his assistant, a Maratha gentleman, then came to me and addressed me very politely. They took off their hats and said to me, with the utmost reverence, "Any service for us, sir? Can we do anything to help you?" I said humorously, "Ask your husband, the boss here." Both of them burst into laughter and said, "We also believe in the true husband and will obey the orders of the true husband like you. We do not care much for the orders of this man. We will see that this impostor husband does not torture you anymore. We will issue orders immediately, and you can have as much fruit as you like. You will get fruits by our orders today. We will treat you as our personal guest, and now you will see what we do for you." After a short while, the Maratha doctor brought a basket full of fruits. He had the specific orders of the medical officer recorded in my history ticket that I should be given fruit regularly. Thus, I broke my fast of after 3 weeks. The Maratha doctor, whose name I unfortunately have forgotten, told me that the Bengali doctor had now reported to the IG prisons that Ranthir Singh was on a hunger strike on the question of religious sentiments. He has neither disobeyed anyone's orders, nor has he been obstinate in any matter. He generally lived on fruit or food cooked by himself. He has now been given fruits, but the diet of fruits alone is insufficient to bring him back to normal health. He has been compelled to go on fast for the last 3 weeks because the jailer secured an order from the superintendent to stop the daily supply of fruits to him. He has now been admitted to the hospital and given fruits. He is taking them without any resistance or objection. But as this diet is insufficient to maintain proper health, he should be allowed to cook his own food and take it. The Maratha doctor assured me that my case had been strongly recommended, and he and the medical officer would not obey the superintendent's orders for force feeding. This Maratha has genuine sympathy for me for one more reason. His brother, Mr. Pingle, had been sentenced to death along with Kartar Singh Sarabha in the Lahore conspiracy case. He disclosed it to me at this juncture. The IG hospitals, on reading the report, strongly recommended my case to the Governor Bihar and Orissa. The governor immediately sent the sanction to the IG prisons, and the order reached the prison authorities within 3 days. My companions now threatened to create havoc in prison if I was kept in isolation even for a day longer. Mr. Husband was seriously upset. On receiving the orders of the IG prisons to allow me to cook my food as I liked, he came running to me and gave out that he had decided to take me to my companions, where I would be able to cook my food as I liked. He thus wanted to take credit for the better treatment that was to be given to me. "Why are you concealing the truth from me, Mr. Husband?" I asked. "It is the government who had ordered you to give me freedom to cook my food, while you take credit for it unnecessarily." Mr. Husband, surprised, tells me, "Tell me who told you about the governor's orders. It appears that you mysteriously came to know about everything that is happening." I told him, "If you are sure that I mysteriously came to know everything, then why do you ask me?" The order was recorded on my history ticket, but Vadhavaram would not give me the iron utensils for cooking, and the fast continued. With red ink he wrote on my history ticket, "He's very obstinate." After 3 days confirming from my companions that I had taken a vow of sub lovavik, to take food only in iron utensils prepared by only those persons who lived by the code of conduct of Guru Gobind Singh. I was given iron utensils and I started cooking my own food. In the courtyard facing my cell, I was given a fireplace where I cooked my food under the vigilance of a jamidar and a sipahi. The battle for sub lovavik was thus won. During this very short period, many sipahis of the prison were strongly influenced by the life and deeds of the Sikh prisoners and showed great sympathy for them. Some of them listened to Gurbani for hours. Some kept hair and beard and became baptized Sikhs of the Khalsa. Many others gave up smoking. No one ever delivered any sermons to them, nor did anyone get a chance to preach anything. The saintly living and heroic deeds of the Sikhs brought them under the spiritual influence of the Sikh faith, and some of them became very keen devotees of the Guru. Prominent among them was a sipahi named Radha Singh, who was by nature a very devout soul. While on duty, he would keep listening to the sweet strains of Sukhmani, which had a magnetic influence on his tender soul. For 3 hours, he would continuously listen to the recitation of Gurbani, which dispelled all dross from his heart and made his whole life pure and luminous as gold. His little devotional acts are so many that a book can be written about them. He felt that God had sent us to the prison only for his redemption. For hours, he would come and stand near my cell and talk to me with deep love and devotion. Everyone called him Sadhu Radha Singh, and so he was. He was a Kshatriya by caste. Now, after taking baptism, he became a true Kshatriya. His family and brothers and other relatives became Sikhs, and he memorized many hymns of Guru Granth Sahib. Thus time passed in peace and holy communion. Many sipahis memorized the hymns of the Guru. We were confined to our prison cells. Hardly 6 months had passed when 12 prisoners of the second supplementary Lahore conspiracy case were brought to our prison, but they were taken to a block, which was just behind our own block. It was easy to talk to one another across the wall. The newcomers were strictly ordered not to talk to us. They were given assurance that they would be given preferential treatment if they did not talk to us. But who could prevent us, the old-timers, from talking to them? We sang a song of welcome. After the song was over, we greeted them with the Khalsa salutation, "Vaheguru Ji Ka Khalsa, Vaheguru Ji Ki Fateh," but there was no answer from the other side. We called a number of prisoners by name, but they were still silent. At last, one Bhai Budh Singh hinted that they had been ordered not to talk on the assurance that they would soon be given permission to move about into the courtyard. Anyway, we succeeded in conveying to them the facts of the situation in jail. Bhai Hira Singh Charad and I were considered to be the main troublemakers. We were taken to another block reserved for Bengali prisoners. Up to the year 1920, we were confined to the cells only. We were not allowed to take even 5 minutes' walk into courtyard. With handcuffs and manacles chained, we spent all the time within our cells. The handcuffs and the fetters on the feet had become the ornaments of our body, and who cares to take off the ornaments?